It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
There goes a fly ball towards left field. Going back fast is Kennedy. Kennedy gets there, and he takes it. And the Cleveland Indians are the world champions of 1948. And
this is Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast. A regular look back at professional baseball in Cleveland from 1901 and beyond. Now, here's your host, Guardians team historian, Jeremy Fedor.
Hey, Guardians fans, we are back with another podcast. On this week's episode, we sit down with Pat Tabler, a former first-round pick of the New York Yankees. Pat played several seasons for Cleveland from 1983 until 1988 when he was traded to the Royals. Pat also represented Cleveland in the 1987 All-Star Game. So we chat about that and a lot more. Hope you enjoy. But anyway, like I said, we're going to just focus on your Cleveland tenure. But first, start back at the beginning. I'd like to ask everyone, you know, when did you realize that baseball was going to be an option for you? I mean, obviously, you excelled in baseball.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a baseball player growing up. I played baseball, but I wasn't a baseball player. I played basketball. I was going to college to play basketball. I was going to go to Virginia Tech. I had a full ride, and I happened to be a pretty good baseball player. And after I'd signed to go to Virginia Tech, and the reason I went there is they were going to allow me to play baseball and basketball, I got drafted by the Yankees. And I started thinking about it, and I'm like, all right, which one do I have a better chance at, like, making, you know, a career out of? And I said, baseball. So I signed with the Yankees, and I never went to college.
So you didn't know the Yankees were looking at you, or was that a surprise?
That was a surprise. People, you know, there were rumors. I mean, things were different back in 1976, okay? They were different. You didn't have all these magazines with all these top prospects and all that. There were rumors like, hey, you know, you could get drafted. And I had worked out for a couple of teams, and I worked out for the Reds. But the Reds had won in 75, so they had the last pick in the first round. They said, if you're there, we're thinking about taking you. And I didn't make it down to them. How many teams were there? 24 back then in 1976? Something like that, 24. So, you know, I loved basketball. I never played summer baseball in high school, never. But they said, you know, you have some talent, we're going to draft you, and that's why it took so long to finally get up there. I had to catch up to everybody who had been playing summer baseball.
So being from the Cincinnati area, you just kind of threw any Yankees feelings in the backseat, granted different leagues, but, you know, if you're not a Yankees fan, you tend to not feel much for them.
Reds fan. And the Reds were such a big part of, you know, youth baseball back then. It was the big red machine. They happened to play the Yankees in the World Series that year, if you remember. But they were such an influence. There were so many good baseball players that came out of Cincinnati that time. Pete Rose and Eddie Brinkman. And then, you know, as you got older, there were three number one picks in 1976, back to back to back, out of Cincinnati high school kids. And next year there were two. Richard Dotson was from Cincinnati, and then of course Ken Griffey Jr. and Barry Larkin, and the whole crew, and I think a lot of that was because of the influence of the Cincinnati Reds.
And so you go through the Yankee system, and then you end up with the Cubs. Play around with the Cubs a little bit. Do you remember the announcement of the trade to Cleveland? Because you were with the White Sox at the time. They had picked you up from the Cubs, and was it just get in the office and you have some news, or?
Nothing is that easy in my life. I was with the White Sox, and I was having a pretty good spring. And it was April 1st, and we went to Fort Myers to play the Royals in one of the last spring training games. And Tony La Russa pulls me off to the side. He said, you were in the lineup. I'm taking you out of the lineup. There might be a trade. And so I sat there during the whole game, and I never played. And I said, you know, I thought it was an April Fool's joke. I really did. And then at the end of the day, he was going to say, hey, you know, you made the team. I hit like 380 or something like that. And he called me in his office and said, we traded you to Cleveland during the game. I'm like, what? I mean, it was like a shock. I seriously thought it was an April Fool's joke, and he was just, you know, pulling my leg. But no, they traded me to Cleveland, and my first thought was, I'll be close to home. I got to make the major league team, but I'm going to be close to home. And Phil Sagey and Gabe Paul were the general managers then. They said, you know, the team has been set. It was one of the last days of spring training, and they said, you know, we want you to go down to the minor leagues because the 25-man roster has been set. If something happens, you'll be the first guy to get called up. And everybody asked for a break. Well, I literally got a break. Toby Harrah broke his wrist the first road trip of the season, and I got called up then like a week into the season and never went back to the minor leagues.
So growing up, watching the Big Red Machine, obviously in Ohio, any thoughts of Cleveland at the time? I mean, were you, had you ever been to the ballpark up in Cleveland? Or
I lived here when I was 4 years old. I never knew that. My mom told me that after I played for Cleveland. She said, you know, we lived there in 1962. And I was like, no, I didn't know that. So did I have any feelings? No, I was like, I was close to home. Basically, I felt like I was home. I was in my home state. I was 3.5 hours away. Friends and family could come up all the time. And it was the best 5.5 years of my baseball career. Playing here, I felt like I was home.
And do you remember anything about that, you know, initial, you know, time in Cleveland once you get here? You kind of had a stable manager for the most part during your time here. It only switched three times.
In 5 years, that's all? You know, in baseball, you know, unless you're like a Mike Trout or in my era, Roger Clemens, I mean, super duper stars, you need to catch a break, but you need somebody in your corner. And I had never had anybody in my corner who believed in me and said, just go out there and play until I came here. Gabe Paul, like I said, was the GM of the Yankees when they drafted me in 76. Mike Ferraro, who was the manager of the Indians at that time, was my manager in the minor league system with the Yankees. Ed Napoleon was his like bench coach, first base coach. He was my manager for like 3 or 4 years in the Yankee organization. And they traded for me, and Mike said, you're going to play. Don't worry about going 0-for-4. Just go out there and play. And I swear, it felt like a piano was lifted off my shoulders. I'm like, I don't have to go out there and like every pitch is, you know, going to be do or die. I'm going to stay in the big leagues or I'm going to get sent out if I don't get a hit. I just went out there and played. And it was like so refreshing and so much easier to play the game of baseball when like you're going to play. We're going to, and I did well. It worked out.
Did you know anyone that was with Cleveland at the time, or you kind of just knew and kind of tossed in there?
Let me think, because that's a long time ago. I do not believe I knew, except Ed Napoleon and Mike Ferraro, you know, they were on the coaching staff. Player-wise, I had never played with or played against some of the guys, because they were in the big leagues and I was in the minor leagues. Couple years later, when like Brett Butler and Brooke Jacoby and Joe Carter and Mel Hall all got traded here, I played with those guys or against those guys in the minor league. But at that time, I didn't know anybody. And being back in Cleveland, it brings back a lot of great memories of those first couple years.
And who'd you kind of, I guess, gel with when you got here? I mean, who'd you kind of get drawn to?
I was really good friends with Brooke Jacoby after he came here, and Scotty Bales, and you know, we're still friends to this day. Joe Carter, he and I played together in Chicago with the Cubs, with Toronto, and here. So we're still friends to this day. So you know, it wasn't a thing. We were at that time. It was a very, when I first got here, it was a veteran team, and me and Julio were some of the youngest guys on the team, but then they started trading the veteran guys and bringing in young guys, and then we kind of grew up together in the organization.
In your wildest dreams, would you ever have seen Julio playing for as long as he did? That's kind of a fan favorite, I think, of Julio. No. And that man just couldn't stop playing. I don't know, he might still be playing.
You know, I don't know if he was ahead of his time, but back in the mid-80s, he would go to the health club and work out 3 days a week and lift weights and eat health foods and stuff like that. And I'm like, What is he doing? I mean, he's not your regular, you know, chicken and beer kind of guy. He like really took care of his body, and it helped him to play as long as he played. And he, I didn't see him playing that long, but what a talented baseball player he was.
Now, your time in Cleveland also coincides with towards the end of the stadium's, you know, usefulness. And you know,
it's a nice way to put it.
It holds so much sentimental value to fans. They love seeing the old pictures. As a player, did you, you know, coming from, well, you came from Chicago with Wrigley, mm-hmm. so obviously that had its own unique quirks to it. But coming to this ballpark, do you remember things just being out of date or broken? Or did you just say, I'm in the majors, man, screw it?
That didn't matter at all. The state, I was in the big leagues, you know, and we all the young guys together, we were in the big leagues, and it felt like a little fraternity of, you know, baseball brothers. And no, that didn't bother me at all. I had a guy come up to me the other day and was telling me about the behind the fence parties that he used to go to when he was a kid. And I said, I can still remember those Sunday mornings, those hamburgers cooking while we were taking batting practice. He goes, well, I was one of those kids back there, and you came back and you autographed my thing, and it's so great to have you back in Cleveland and stuff like that. But I remember that. I remember like it was yesterday, because I can remember the sights and sounds and smells of those Saturday, Sunday mornings, those hamburgers cooking and going back behind the fence and saying, can you give me a hamburger? I'm really hungry. And I'd eat hamburger and sign autographs and take pictures with people.
And do you remember those games? Because I think talking to Scotty, he mentioned that he pitched an opener here and 50,000-60,000 fans. Then the next day, maybe 4,000 fans. Do you remember that ebb and flow of...
Sure, sure. And I always said, and I said it then, and I'll say it then. Now, I said if the Cleveland Ball Club ever got a winning, consistent team, they will set records for attendance. And unfortunately, I wasn't part of it. I had already left, but I watched from afar. 455 straight sellouts, 455, because they were a consistent winner year after year, and they love Cleveland baseball in this part of town. They love it, and it didn't surprise me that they would set attendance records, because in the old stadium, you know, like you said, they'd come on July 4th or opening day, and then there'd be 10,000 the next day, and you couldn't even see them. But, man, if you had a good team, I remember when we won like 10 in a row, and we couldn't start games on time because people were rushing the box offices to get into the stadium, you know?
And I think that's where that Brett Butler article comes in, where he mentioned, you know, it was a 10-game win streak, and then you guys lost like 19-2 or something like that to someone, and he was, you know, upset with the fans. So it seemed to be, I mean, any sports fan, I guess, can be fickle with that. Do you recall, too, I mean, a lot of people mentioned that being on the lake, that wind would whip in and made it kind of a hard place to play in April. And do you remember any of those days where...
Snow, played in rain, played in bugs, played in fog, played in hot, cold, rainy, the whole thing. That's just the way it is. And it's still cold in April playing here. It doesn't matter that you're on the... It's still cold. That's just the way it is.
And you've been in the league a little bit before you came to Cleveland, but were there guys, whether when you were with the Cubs or here, that, you know, you'd step in the batter's box and there's Nolan Ryan or there's, you know, pitchers like that, that you had to kind of say, you know, pinch me, because the average person will never get a chance in a major league, you know, batter's box. But growing up watching the game and being a fan, was it ever surreal as a player to be out there?
Absolutely. And if people say it isn't, they're lying to you, because if you care about the game, like I care about the game, you think of those things. And I remember my first game. I was with the Chicago Cubs, and I'm like looking at the ivy, and I'm looking at the bleacher bums, and then I'm in Wrigley Field, and I'm like, this is the place I used to watch the Cincinnati Reds play, and now here I am playing for them. I couldn't concentrate. I couldn't remember how many outs there were. I couldn't remember the score. I was just so excited. And yeah, when you face Nolan Ryan or Steve Carlton or Ron Guidry or some of these Gaylord Perry, yeah, you're like, holy smack. But then you're like, okay, I want to beat these guys now. I want to show them that I can beat these guys. And that's what overtakes your thought process.
Big fan of Gaylord, Nate, and I like to talk about Gaylord. So you went up against him. Were you able to hit Gaylord or?
When he threw it straight, he pitched against us in spring training. And I'm telling you, I'd never seen a ball do what that thing did when he threw it. And I'm like going, hey, come on, man. It's spring training. Give me a break, you know. And he'd just sit out there and laugh, you know. Gosh, those were some fun times.
Any particular pitcher that you found extremely tough that you said you couldn't even buy a hit off of anyone that –
I could not hit Jack Morris or Dave Steeb. I got hits off of them, but I couldn't hit them. And one game in particular for both of them, like Steeb, you know, fastball that would run in on you or slider away, and you're like, I can't hit both of them, so I'm going to sit on one of them. So I was sitting on the slider, and of course, he drills me right in the back with a fastball. So I always remember that, and when we became teammates, I reminded him of that. And he goes, oh, yeah, I was doing that on purpose because I could tell you were leaning out over the plate. And then Jack Morris, he was with Detroit, and my first time up, he was tough. We knew what pitches were coming when he was out of the windup. He was doing something with his glove that we picked up on, and sure enough, but we still couldn't hit it. And my first time up, strike one, strike two, fork ball, struck me out. Second time up, strike one, strike two, fork ball, strike three, second time. Third time up, strike one, strike two, fork ball, three strikeouts. And we got into the ninth inning, and Brooke Jacoby was hitting ahead of me with two outs. I'm like, Jake, make an out. I don't want to hit again against this guy. I don't want to hit against him. He gets on base, strike one, strike two. And I'm like, I've never struck out four times, like, ever in my life. He throws a fastball right down the middle, and I hit a home run against him. And I'm laughing around the bases, laughing all the way around the bases. And a couple years later, we're teammates in Toronto, and I reminded him of that. And he's like, hey, I felt sorry for you. I go, bull crap, I don't believe that. He was so competitive. I go, Jack, you're the dumbest pitcher, man. You had me. All you had to do, you could roll it up there and I would have swung and missed, but, or thrown a split. He threw a fastball down the middle, hit a home run. I think the only time we ever got a hit off of him.
And you played in an era, too. A lot of the stadiums just aren't there anymore. Do you remember any particular one that stuck out to you? I mean, Detroit's old ballpark was unique, old Yankee Stadium. Do you remember just those times out there and being on the same field, whether it's Fenway where Babe Ruth played or
Yeah, you have all those memories of all those old stadiums, but I didn't like playing on AstroTurf inside domes. It was just weird. I hated the Metrodome. It felt like you were hitting inside a mall. I hated the Kingdome. Just hated it. They had some bad teams, but I couldn't get any hits there because it just felt weird. And old Tiger Stadium, home plate was turned cockeyed for left-handed batters to hit it into the upper deck. And I'd stand over there, and home plate, it was just tilted a little bit. And I'd stand and I'd go, something doesn't seem right here. And the grass was like this thick, you know, you had to get the ball. And I love that stadium, but I'm glad it's gone. Let's put it that way.
Now, I know you weren't a pitcher, but did you ever run into Feller at spring training? I know
the
other guys. And do you remember any stories from Bob or any I like to get?
Love Bob. I mean, he was like an encyclopedia of the game of baseball that I missed because I wasn't born, and I would pick his brain all the time. And one night I was asking him about Jackie Robinson how many people, you know, played against Jackie Robinson. He said he was a heck of a baseball player. And I'd ask him about Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams, all those people. And I love listening and talking to Bob and hearing stories of the old days. And he told me, he said he threw a no-hitter and the batting averages didn't go down. And I'm like, huh? How do you throw a no-hitter and the batting averages don't go down? He says, figure it out. So I did. I figured it out. And you're shaking your head like you know. And I'm like,
it's a good bar bet if you're right about
it. It's a great bar bet. It's a great trivia question, too. Great trivia questions. I've stumped many of people, and Bob told me that 40 years ago.
What were the clubhouses like? Again, the team, you know, wasn't contending, and was that something that you guys knew going into the seasons, that these teams are just, you know, not quite to a level of
the Cleveland teams that we played for?
Yeah.
To a man, nobody thought like that.
Okay.
Nobody. Everybody's like, we're going to win. We're building something good here. It's going to happen. You never thought about, you know, oh, we stink. We're never going to win. No, you went there to win. And when we got a lot of young players, you know, it was like, hey, there's a nice core of players here. If they can stay together and we can get some pitching, we can do something. I think one year we won 86 games, 85 or 86
84
games.
And 86.
In the American League East, and it's like, holy smokes. Yeah. You know, we're not that far away, but we were.
Now, you've been around baseball for a long time. How was, I mean, traveling in the 80s as a ball player? I mean, obviously, I have to imagine it's kind of veered into a different direction nowadays, or was it similar?
There's just more people on the plane. Okay. There's just more. It's not like the Major League movie where they're, like, on buses and they're, like, taping the airplane, you know, propeller and all. None of that kind of stuff. It was first class. All it was the big leagues. You know, the food everywhere. Whatever you wanted, you could have it. It was the exact same. The only difference is there's, you know, you'd have the 25 guys and a few coaches and the media. Now there's like 70 guys on the plane now, you know.
And you know, we just recently lost John Adams. Do you remember hearing him when you were playing? I mean, that was such
of course, a of course. And I remember after I met him and who he was, I was here in Cleveland for a, I think we were doing a fantasy camp reunion. And I was on my way to Toronto, and he was there, and he was hitting his drum and all that kind of stuff. And I said, down on the field, and he said, do you want to take batting practice? And I said, yeah, sure. And I said, well, where's the bat? He goes, no, use my drum. I'm like, use your drum? So he would throw the ball, and I would take his drum and hit the ball at home plate. I don't know if you were there, Nate.
Oh,
yeah, it was there. So then I went out on the mound, and I threw him batting practice, and he took BP with his drum and hit his drum. He goes, you're not going to hurt my drum. And that's my story with John Adams, and I was so sad to hear he passed away. But that's my story with that guy. It was, yeah, BP with his drum. Kidding me? Yeah. True story.
Any good stories about Bobby D? That we can tell?
Yeah. Love Bobby D. Bobby D is the same guy today in 2023 as I met in 1983, 40 years ago. He's the exact same guy, and I think that's all you need to know about him. He's a wonderful guy, and Cleveland should be so proud to have somebody like that representing him.
Has his golf game improved, though?
I haven't played with him for years. Is he still swinging left-handed?
Oh, yeah.
He's swinging left-handed? He's still slicing? Like?
Oh, yeah.
No, I'm not sure. I haven't played with him for years. But, yeah, he's a good dude.
Now, I think one of the highlights of your Cleveland tenure is the 87 All-Star Game selection. Now, you didn't get in until the 13th inning. Did you? Were you under the impression that you weren't going to get in unless there was an emergency?
John McNamara was the manager who said, I'll try and get everybody in. And it was in Oakland, and it was Mark McGwire's rookie year. And we both played first base. And he said, okay, I want you to go in for McGwire. And I said, there is no way I am going in for McGwire. There is no way. It's in Oakland. I said, they wouldn't let me out of the stadium. I said, no, I'll sit on the bench and – you know, if you can use me, use me. And it went into extra innings. You couldn't see. The game started at like 4 o'clock or 4:30 or something like that, and you couldn't see for 10 innings. You couldn't see the ball hitting. So by the time I got in there, it had gotten dark. And I remember I was on deck, and I'm like, I'm going to win this game for us. Kevin Seitzer had walked. We were facing Sid Fernandez. I'm like, I'm going to win this game. I'm going to win the MVP award. And I'm like, I'm going to do it. Yeah. And I went up there, and I struck out. And so I didn't do any of that. But, hey, I was there, and I got an at-bat.
Now, All-Star Game announcements are so much bigger now than they were. Was it just something where your manager called you in the clubhouse and said –
I think so. I remember we were in Texas, and we had a lot of deserving guys, and everybody had to have a representative, and I was lucky enough to be picked, and I was like, man, I don't deserve to do this. I mean, I was so intimidated when I went into that locker room for the first time and seeing the greats of the game, Kirby Puckett and Dave Winfield and Cal Ripken, and the list goes on and on and on. I'm like, what am I doing with those guys, you know? But everybody had to be represented. I'm like, I'm going to, you know, represent the Cleveland Indians to the best of my ability, and hopefully I can do something. But it was intimidating, but it was a heck of an experience, and I am so fortunate to be able to say that I was on that team.
And I'm sure you get asked about your ability to hit with the bases loaded, but also being do you remember – you had five walk-off hits with Cleveland. Do you remember any of them?
I remember one against Quiz with the bases loaded. It's one of those nights that we had like a walk-up crowd, and it was like jamming. It was part of that 10-game win streak, I think. I know I have one there. Somebody showed a film the other night, or a highlight when I was doing the game, and they showed a home run. I guess I hit a walk-off home run. I didn't know that. I did not know I had five. So
I was just with Cleveland too. Yeah, you had one. Really? Rick Waits in 84, and Quisenberry in 86, and then next week against Greg Harris against Texas.
It was against Texas that okay.
And then Tom Niedenfuhr from Baltimore.
Tom Niedenfuhr, sure.
And Ray Burris also in 87 against Milwaukee. So two of those were with bases loaded. Both had intentional walks in front of you, and you
really
got the job done there. Now, your Cleveland career came to an end in 88. Again, similar situation. Is it just, hey, you know, sit out? We might be having something going on.
I think it was. We were taking batting practice. We were in Detroit, and Doc Edwards called me in and said, "We just traded you to Kansas City. Call this number and thanks, and we'll see you later." Shock. Because I had just signed a 2-year contract, I had just bought a house out in Fairview Park, I had just put about $35,000 into the house, and I was thinking about moving to Cleveland. And the week it got done, I got traded. And I had to go to Kansas City. My wife, she was pregnant with our third child. 6 and 4 were the other two, and she was pregnant. Had to sell the house. Got a U-Haul, packed all of our stuff up, drove it down to Cincinnati with the kids, and her brother helped out, and got all the stuff into our house, packed up our car, drove it to Kansas City, and found a place for us to live. And I'm telling you, that's special. That's special. So that's what I remember about that I had to go. I had to go meet the team wherever we were, and I had to start playing with them, and she set everything up, and that's to be able to do that's the kind of thing that people don't see, and that, you know, special lady, you know, special ladies to be able to do that kind of stuff. And so, yeah, always appreciative of that. It, you know, I got traded, but it affected the whole family.
Do you remember who you were traded for?
Blackie.
Yeah.
And I faced him like a week later and hit a home run against him in Kansas City. When Cleveland came to town, he hung me a curveball. I hit a home run at Royal Stadium against him. And I saw him like a month ago when they were here, He's the manager of Colorado, and I reminded him of that. I just had to remind him of that.
Is there a special bond between you and the guy you're traded for, or is that just kind of a...
I think, you know, we've just become friends over the years. We had a mutual friend who we were both still really close to, George Brad. And George told me, he says, I didn't like you when you first came here because I was really good friends with Blackie. But now that I know you, I like you too. So, you know, that's why we become friends.
Just George Brett, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
What did he have a response to your home run when you reminded him? Did he?
He was like, "Oh, what's new?" You know.
Now, what was the number 10? Was that just what you got, or did you?
Yeah, that was just what they.
Some guys have meaning to the number, and you just whatever they throw at you. And
back then, you're in the big leagues. You can give me 110. I'm happy. Just I'm playing in the major leagues.
And then, 2001, they celebrate the 100th anniversary team. What was that?
Was that 2001?
2001.
Holy smokes.
But the thing about this team being, 100 years old and getting selected, considering everyone that's come through Cleveland, I mean, do you remember getting the call or the feelings being on the field? I mean, with Tommy and with, I forget who else was out there at first, Andre Thornton, I think. And
I remember Jim was like right after me, and I was like, oh boy, I hope they don't boo me because they can't wait to cheer for Tommy, you know? And Andre was there, that's right. Look, man, I'm a fortunate person, and I'm fortunate to be associated with this organization. Even though I've been gone for so long, I always felt like this was home for me. And people like Bobby D and Nate, they've always made me feel welcome and part of this, even though I was gone for whatever, 35 years or whatever it was. I've always been part of this. So to be part of that 100-year thing, I mean, that's really special. That really makes me feel good.
And I guess your time in Cleveland, obviously you went on with Toronto and had success out there. I mean, do you feel like your time in Cleveland kind of set you up to succeed later on? I mean, like I said, you went through some highs and lows here and kind of that level you out.
Here's what happens. You get to the big leagues and you're happy. You're in the big leagues. Then the next step, you want to stay there. And you want to have success there. Okay? And everything's about, the team and you and trying to help the team win. Then after a while, after you've been there in the big leagues for a while, you want to win. And I got close when I was with Kansas City. I think 3 years in a row we finished behind the Oakland A's, 88, 89, and 90. They were in the World Series all 3 years, and we were second. And I'm like, man, we're that close. And I was with the Mets, and we finished second by like two games to the Pirates. And then when I went to Toronto, finally won, and it doesn't get any better than that. When I took that uniform off and I put it in my bag, we had just won the World Series, doesn't get any better than that. And I'm like, I'm going to retire. And it took the winner. I'm like, you know what? Doesn't get any better than that. So you want to do well for yourself and all that, but after a while, you want to win. You want to be on a team that wins. And I'll tell you what, there's nothing better than winning a World Series.
And any final special memories of Cleveland, your time here? I mean, obviously a lot happens over the course of, five seasons. It's tough to kind of cover a thing in a half hour. I don't want to keep you guys too late.
Being here, being from Ohio, being a Buckeye, I had more friends away from the ballpark when I was here than I did when I in the locker room. So I met so many people that have become friends, and now to come back, like I just saw them, I had lunch with a friend of mine I've known for 40 years, and we had dinner with a family that we've been friends with for over 40 years. And to tell those stories of those back in the day, I think my friend came to 75 games one year, 75 out of the 81 game, but it's just, The memories are just seems like it was like yesterday, but it's been 35, 40 years. That's that's what I remember about all this. And we drove around our old neighborhood and saw our houses where we lived, all the places we lived here. So this place holds a special place in my heart.
You went back to the house your wife packed up and
Yep. Yes, we did. It looks really nice, too. Like, I wish I lived there now, because it's really nice. Really nice.
Well, awesome. Like I said, I don't want to keep you guys. I know you're on a time limit, so I appreciate taking the time. And you mentioned you might still have those wristbands somewhere. You ever going to don those for a game?
You know what? When I was home, I opened up a drawer in my desk, and I saw those wristbands.
Awesome.
And I saw somebody the last time I was here, and they said,
me.
They're making a comeback.
Oh, yeah,
that was you?
Yep.
You said they're making a comeback.
Yep.
And I saw that. I saw that. I've got like seven of them. And in my desk. My wife said I have to give them to my grandkids.
Yeah.
She said that would be a really good memento for them. So I think we're going to frame them and give them to our grandkids.
Do you have many mementos from your career? Or is it?
I've got a whole basement full of stuff. I went around and got autographs and bats from, Cal Ripken and Kirby and, Don Mattingly and all that. I've got baseballs of Hall of Famers. They had that Equitable Old Timers, and we were in Texas, and I got pictures with Ernie Banks and Willie Mays and Hank Aaron, and they all autographed balls, and I had a sanitary sock full of autographs. And I have one ball left, and it was for Joe DiMaggio. And they're like, Joe doesn't sign at these things. So I was so disappointed. So I had this whole sanitary sock full of them. We played the game, and the hotel was right next door to the ballpark. So at the end of the game, I get my sani full of autographed balls, and I walk back to the hotel, and I'm like, man, that would have been nice to get DiMaggio. Press the button for the elevator. They open up. Guess who's in there? Joe DiMaggio. And I go in there, and I go, Joe. And I think he remembered me because my first big league camp, like 5 years earlier, he was there. And Mickey Mantle and Whitey Ford and Yogi Berra and all those guys were there at my first big league camp. And I said, could you sign an autograph, Paul, for me? He said, sure. Joe DiMaggio, what an autograph. To Pat, best wishes, Joe DiMaggio. That's in my collection. So I got my Joe DiMaggio.
Is that your most prized artifact from your career?
Probably Johnny Bench and Pete Rose, because of what they mean to me when I was growing up. Yeah, and my Johnny Bench rookie card.
Keep that one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that one.
I could keep talking forever, but you guys have to go. So thank you again for
a lot of fun
stopping by, and
send me those pictures.
Yes, I'll.
You've been listening to Cleveland's Team, a baseball history podcast with Guardians team historian Jeremy Fedor.